Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloen. You may have seen the recent news about the project to take down the dams on the Klamath River to let it flow once again from its headwaters to the Pacific Ocean. It's a large-scale effort to help restore the imperiled Chinook salmon population, which has seen a dramatic collapse in the past couple of decades due to a variety of causes, from water mismanagement to habitat loss and climate change and overfishing. In this program, we'll feature two scientists who've been important players in this restoration effort. We'll be joined by Barry McCovey Jr., a fisheries biologist for the Yurok tribe, whose people have been dramatically and adversely affected by the dams for decades. We'll also hear from Kat Curlin, who co-hosts the UC Davis podcast Unfold, which recently featured the dam removal on their program. We'll get her journalist's perspective on the dam removal project and the science driving it. But our first guest is Robert Lusardi. Robert is an assistant professor of freshwater ecology in the Department of Wildlife, Fish, and Conservation Biology, and he's also the associate director for the Center for Watershed Sciences at the University of California, Davis. Rob Lusardi, welcome once again to Blue Dot.
Good morning. It's good to be with you guys.
Well, we want to get an update on the great Klamath Dam removal story. So before we get into what's going on right now, just give us a quick background, the elevator speech version, if you will, on what the history of this is and why these dams were removed.
Yeah, sure. So there are six dams in the Klamath. Four are being removed. Those include Iron Gate Dam, Kopko 1 and 2, and J.C. Boyle. They've been in the system for, in some cases, up to 100 years, and salmon have not been able to move around them volitionally, so they have not been able to swim by them. There are no fish ladders on these dams, et cetera. So they've really been cut off from hundreds of miles of habitat in the upper basin. A group of scientists, almost entirely led by Yurok tribe, Karuk tribe, Hopa tribe, have kind of moved forward in kind of recognizing the harm that these dams have caused, not just for fish, but for the people of indigenous cultures as well. And were successful in negotiating the removal. The dams provide, historically, would have provided hydroelectric power. And I think that the FERC relicensing, which means dams come up every 50 years for relicensing. And in this case, the prospect of putting fish passage on these dams and spending millions of dollars economically or on paper did not make sense for the power companies. And so the tribes and, to a lesser extent, the NGOs and federal and state agencies as well were successful in kind of making the argument that these dams are better if they're not in the system. It's better for people, it's better for fish, and certainly better for the Karuk, the Hopa, and the Yurok tribes as well. So they have been working diligently. The KRC, Klamath Renewal Corporation, is taking the leadership in really being the quarterback for this and removing the dams. And they should be out right around September 1st, which is great timing because that's right around when we get Fall Run Chinook moving into the upper basin. So for the first time this fall, we should have Fall Run Chinook this fall moving to places where they have not had access to in over 100 years.
And of course, you know, there's always some people who are unhappy with whatever you do. Has there been much, you know, pushback on this from some of the local people who perhaps lived along these lakes that were there with the dams before?
Yeah, I'm sure. I think change is hard. And I think that's the case, particularly in Siskiyou County in some cases. You know, some people have said, you know, this is going to be kind of a boondoggle and what are we doing? And our lakefront properties, which I remind you, it's not a lake, right? It's a reservoir. It's an artificial lake. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really important for recreation, aesthetic beauty and these things. But I think that with time, my hope is that people are open to it and open to seeing the benefits of dam removal. The idea of being on this river again and seeing fish move past my home is of great interest. And I hope that will be the case for the future as well.
And then when you do a project like this, especially, you know, those reservoirs were there for a long time and you have all that, you know, one of the problems with reservoirs, as you know, is sediments build up in them and over time that aren't getting flushed out by the natural river system. And so, you know, that all that stuff's there. What kind of restoration work is being done to try to, you know, get that back to being a riparian corridor, you know, the way it was hundreds of years ago?
Yeah. So I think importantly that will take some time, right? You're restoring the Klamath to somewhat of a more natural flow regime. And we know rivers really need two things to be healthy. They need water, of course, and they also need sediment. That's how they function, right? That's their geomorphology or their structure of the rivers. That's how they create habitat. So sediment is really important. And so in the short term, we have lots of sediment moving out of the system, and we expect a decline in some of our kind of ecological indicators, if you will. A good one that maybe we'll talk about a little bit later are aquatic insects. So we can monitor those, and we think that we'll see changes in the diversity and density of aquatic insects. But longer term, once we get higher flows through the system and whatnot, a lot of that sediment either gets built into new habitats that are important for fish and insects and birds and riparian vegetation. And some of that system, of course, some of that sediment as well will move kind of out of the system downstream. And so the Yurok tribe has just done a phenomenal job in planting riparian plants throughout kind of these reservoir footprints, if you will. So if you've seen any of the photographs, kind of looks like a little bit of a moonscape. You can imagine a reservoir sitting there for 100 years. And when you drain that, you're kind of left with almost, if you can think of like an estuary, like a tidal mudflat or something, right? Not a lot of plants, not a lot of riparia or anything. And the Yurok tribe is really taken on the monumentous task of planting native riparian plants along these reservoir footprints to encourage basically the start of that vegetation, right? And that will take some time, but we do know that from, you know, previous studies and whatnot, that riparian vegetation is, under the right conditions, is one of the fastest to respond. Whereas something like salmon can take years or native fish can take years, riparian vegetation can respond pretty quickly under the right conditions, within a few years kind of thing. So I anticipate that we will have some sort of successional process on these reservoir footprints where we kind of have seedlings and riparian vegetation and eventually moving into more mature, older species down the road.
And our mutual good friend, Kat Curlin from UC Davis, who will join us later to talk about her podcast about this and her interviews with folks like you. We were discussing this, and the big picture takeaway that she had and that I have is that science is driving this project. This is a science-driven project from the tribal members, you know, through people like you. And I'm wondering what kind of data collection and science has been done, you know, before, and what will be done then during and after? Because, I think getting that data set has got to be really important to see, you know, how did this work, and, you know, show people that this can be done and that the science shows that it's good.
Yeah, I think that's an important part. So I think, you know, expectations with the dam removals on the Klamath are really important. This is not the Elwha River, which is previously the largest dam removal in history, right? The Elwha is a very different system. Up in the Northwest, I mean, its headwaters are essentially are Olympic National Park. And we have a very different system here, right? So the science, just to kind of get to the last part of that, is really important because it allows us to track the response of the river, the response of the fish, the response of some of these biological indicators, and then adaptively manage it, right? And so that's why the science is really vital to the Klamath dam removal. The second thing I would say is that my strongest science partners, in addition to Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Cal Department of Fish and Wildlife, and some of the federal agencies, are certainly the tribes. So I work extremely closely on almost all of my science in the Klamath with the Yurok tribe, with Barry McCovey, who is the head of the biology department there. And they just have a wonderful biology department. And we work together in looking at temperatures and aquatic insects and fish, et cetera. The same could say, be said for the Kruk tribe. I work very closely with Taz Soto, who is one of they're just phenomenal fisheries biologists. We have lots of projects going on, Dave. Everything from looking at water chemistry changes to aquatic insects, which I've mentioned a couple times, to the fish themselves.
What I'd like to ask first about is aquatic insects, because I know as somebody that's a fly angler that when I go fishing, you know, the first thing that I do wherever I go is I don't go wading in the water and throwing my line out there. I just like to sit and look around and see what bugs are here. Mm-hmm. What are the fish feeding on? And usually if you have a healthy system, you're going to see those aquatic insects. So maybe talk about that a little bit and what we're observing and what we hope to see in the Klamath.
Yeah, I love it. So as a fly angler myself as well, that's what I grew up doing, right? It's like first sitting down by the river and kind of turning the rocks over and seeing what types of mayflies and caddisflies I would see and then start to fish. Yeah, my background, I have a really strong background in the taxonomy of insects. So a lot of my earlier work with my graduate work was all about insects. And so insects are incredible indicators of change in aquatic systems. They are very speciose. There's just a lot of different species. They're short-lived, right? So most insects will live less than a year, sometimes not very long at all, like a month or something. Other insects can live multiple years, but they change very quickly, right? And they change to environmental conditions. So you can imagine if you have, the example I usually talk about is thinking about like a, you know, cold stream. And if all of a sudden you put warm water into that stream, or we were talking about like sediment earlier, if you pull some sediment into the stream, your insects will change very quickly. And that's because they're extremely mobile. They can, what we call, drift through the system. They can basically release from the habitats, the plants, the rocks that they're hanging on to if they don't like the conditions, and they can move. And that habitat becomes readily colonized by other aquatic insects. So in terms of the Klamath, we actually have 16 sites set up from Link River in Oregon all the way down to Blue Creek, very close to the mouth of the Klamath. We work very closely with the Yurok tribe on this, in that we basically split the basin in half, collect our insects, and then the insects come back to UC Davis and we do the ID work with our partners as well. And we have 4 years of baseline data. And so Barry, who I mentioned earlier, the Yurok tribe, and myself really went to funders and said, we need to establish just kind of scientific baseline for the biology of the Klamath River prior to dam removal to understand how things will transition during the dam removal and then watch the recovery process post dam removal. And so at these 16 sites, we've collected, you know, replicate samples at each of these locations. And we've done a lot of the ID work already to establish that baseline. And now we're kind of getting into the fun part, if you will, right? So as the reservoirs were drained, as we saw increase in sediment move through the system, changes in water temperature, et cetera, we collected our aquatic insects this summer with Yurok tribe in July. And we're really interested to look at what those say, if you will, kind of what signature they're providing. And then we'll continue to collect those for at least the next 3 years to see kind of what the response is. So it's extremely valuable information. And what we like to see is a diversity of aquatic insects and generally relative high densities of that diversity of insects as well. So things like caddisflies, things like mayflies, things like stoneflies, they all require really cold water. They all require sufficient substrate like gravels and cobbles and those things. And they require oxygen as well. So depending on how the invertebrates change, that gives us insight into how the biology of the river is changing. And then we can convey that information to managers and things might be able to be adaptively managed if necessary.
And then how about like the physical chemistry of the water? Are you doing lots of monitoring of, you know, what's in that water and the temperature and pH and things like that?
Yeah. So at those 16 sites that I mentioned earlier, we're collecting invertebrates. We are also collecting water temperature continuously, essentially continuously. We have thermistors, we call them. They measure water temperature automatically every 30 minutes. Two of my crew are actually on the river right now downloading those. So we go quarterly and we download those, download the data and bring it back to the lab so we can kind of look at water temperature. At the same time, we collect grab water samples for water chemistry. So we can look at indicators of productivity. So these are like nutrients, so like nitrogen and phosphorus, and look at changes in that through time. And with dam removal, we can look at turbidity. So get an idea of kind of what the sediment is like in the water column, if that makes sense. Turbidity is just an indicator of if you see like a really cloudy, kind of muddy river, that's a highly turbid system, right? So we can get a feel for that as well. And then, yes, we look at things like pH and electrical conductivity and things like that. We don't have continuous data sets like we do for water chemistry. So we sample, as I mentioned, about four times a year, these grab samples at these 16 sites, which will give us an idea of what's going on. I think there are probably other folks looking at have permanent stations set up with auto samplers, et cetera, where they're looking at kind of daily changes, that kind of thing, like the consultants like Res and whatnot.
And then how long do you think into the future will be, you know, before we have enough information, enough data collected to where we'll get a handle on, you know, how well this worked?
Yeah, I think it's like a spectrum, Dave, if you will. So I think like almost immediately we'll have an idea of how things are changing, right? So the aquatic insects that we've talked, and you know, already extensively about, by the way, which I love because everyone always wants to talk about fish. I love people are interested in insects. You know, obviously we haven't looked at the data that was collected in July. In fact, the crew that I mentioned that's on the river is meeting up with UROC today to pick up the samples that they collected, right? So we will sort of break those down in ID, and we anticipate there to be changes almost immediately. And then in terms of recovery process, I think by next summer, when we go out and sample the aquatic insects at these 16 sites again, we'll begin to see what that recovery looks like. How quickly it recovers is very difficult to say. You know, when that ecosystem is quote unquote fully recovered and how you define that is kind of, I leave that to the managers. But what I can say is I expect kind of incremental improvements in the biology of the river, basically starting very shortly, starting now and into the summer. And then I expect that some of that is dependent on, you know, what kind of water years we have, like do we have wet years or dry years, et cetera. But I expect that we will see recovery through time.
Well, and of course, you mentioned the Chinook salmon, which are so imperiled on the West Coast here. They've had such a difficult time the last 20 years. It's been a pretty steep decline. This does feel like a bit of a Hail Mary pass. Do you think there really is hope for the salmon with this dam removal? Are you hopeful that that's going to really help?
I would say I'm more than hopeful. You know, I get the question sometimes is, you know, Rob, is this just a drop in the bucket? Like, how important is this? This is way more. This is the bucket, right? So we need to open up these habitats. When you have the possibility of opening 400 miles of rearing and spawning habitat for salmon on the West Coast, that is a bet I'll take all day long, right? So we really need to hold that diversity, that life history diversity is super important, what we have. And trying to bring back these habitats that are truly incubators of life history diversity. And when we can incubate that life history diversity and improve it, that improves our diversity among populations of salmon and trout across the landscape. And if we can do that, that ultimately will provide resilience to change, right? So as our environments are changing, diversity is super important. These experiences that these fish live, and opening up 400 miles of habitat in the Upper Klamath Basin is one way to encourage that life history diversity to return and really give these fish a fighting chance into the future.
Well, Rob Lusardi, research ecologist, freshwater research ecologist for UC Davis and associate director of the Center for Watershed Sciences there. Thanks for sharing these insights with us into what's going on with the dam removal up on the Klamath and what it means for fish, water, and people, as some of my friends say.
Yeah, you're welcome, Dave. Anytime. I appreciate it.
Thanks to our guest, Robert Lusardi from the Center for Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our look at the science behind the Klamath River Dam Removal Project. I'm Dave Schlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Our next guest is Barry McCovey Jr. Barry is the senior fisheries biologist for the Yurok tribe and their director of tribal fisheries. Barry McCovey, welcome to Blue Dot.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave.
Before we get going too long, I'd like to have you kind of give us an encapsulated vision of how this came about, because I know this has been important to the Yurok tribe for as long as those dams have been there. Can you kind of give us a sense of how this came about, this dam removal project?
When those dams were built, starting in, you know, the early 1900s, I think around 1912 or so, was when the first dam was constructed on the Klamath. Tribal people in the basin weren't really consulted with. Today, you know, that could never happen. Obviously, there's laws and regulations where tribes need to be consulted with if something's going to impact them. But back then, there wasn't. And so no one came and talked to the tribal people of the Klamath Basin and said, hey, do you guys think it's a good idea if we build these dams and block the river and stop salmon from migrating to the upper basin? If they had, I'm sure the tribal people would have said, no, this isn't a good idea. But that never happened. And so we kind of, as tribal people and indigenous people of this basin, kind of witnessed the slow death of the Klamath River over time after those dams went in. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of other kind of anthropogenic resource extractive industries that have impacted the Klamath Basin and the Klamath River that also helped to kind of bring down the once mighty river. Initially, there was mining and then there was logging and there's been water extraction. So not just dams, but, you know, water being extracted from the basin and moved to other basins. There's overfishing. There's been a lot of different things. Now we're dealing with climate change, right? So there's been a lot of different impacts on the river. The dams that were built were probably one of the most impactful actions that were taken to harm the river. And so people didn't really have a say in it. And as time went on, the river kind of got worse and worse and people suffered because indigenous people are intrinsically tied to that river for mental health, spiritual health, physical health. Our well-being is kind of dictated by the well-being of the river in some ways. And so as things deteriorated and time went on, we recognized the tribe, the Yurok tribe and others kind of formally had fisheries departments formed and hired researchers and experts, and we started monitoring our fishery and we started doing all this science, and kind of everything was pointing to these dams as having a major impact on the health of the river and the health of salmon runs. And then in 2002, there was a major fish die-off in the lower Klamath River during the fall. It was fall Chinook and coho salmon. It was probably around 70,000 fish or so. It was the largest salmon die-off in the history of the United States. And it happened right on the Yurok Indian Reservation. And so that was caused by low flows and a number of different things. But it really galvanized the communities on the river and outside of the Klamath River, too. It brought everyone together for one purpose. And removing those dams became that purpose. So it wasn't just the tribes, it was, you know, non-governmental organizations and even some federal partners and state partners and others, some private partners. Everyone kind of recognized that, hey, you know, we might be running out of time here on the Klamath as far as an ecosystem that's able to sustain fish runs. anadromous fish runs, something that everyone's really, really concerned about. It felt like we might be running out of time. And if catastrophes like that 2002 fish kill could happen, we didn't know something like that could happen, but it did happen. And if that could happen again, we saw on the horizon, you know, the possible extirpation of these fish species that are so important to us. And so everyone kind of came together and started working towards this one goal of getting the Klamath River dams removed, the four Klamath River dams that were just removed. And the relicensing was coming up in 2006. And, you know, the effort has been 2 decades worth of ups and downs, a lot of hard work from many, many different people in many different aspects. There's the science, there's the policy, there's the law, there's the advocacy, you know, people out there protesting. All of that had to come together kind of in this perfect formula to convince the powers that be that dam removal was in the best interest of the community, of this nation.
So what exactly, you know, got the ball rolling to this point where you for example, and the rest of the tribe had a sense of this is going to finally happen?
So in 2016, there was an agreement signed, and it kind of paved the way for where we're at now. It opened the door for this process to happen. It brought on the states of California and Oregon to help pay and to take on some of the liability. It brought the owner of the dam, PacifiCorp, which is a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway. They were on board and in agreement. Of course, there was a couple more ups and downs between then and now, and we had to resurrect this deal a couple of times, but everyone finally decided that it was the best thing to do. And within the last couple of years, there's been just kind of milestone after milestone, whether it's all of the regulatory stuff getting taken care of, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, kind of releasing the process over to the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, and then, you know, having the first dam removed, the breaching of the dams and the reservoirs drained, and now here we are today with the free-flowing river.
Could you talk a bit about some of the partners that you have in this? Because it's the tribe and other tribes and lots of different entities working together on this, which is, I find, very inspiring. Could you talk about the importance of those helpful allies?
Sure. I mean, none of this is possible without collaboration from others. So the Yurok tribe played a major role in this, but we would not be here, absolutely would not be here without all of the other partners who've been involved. That includes the Karuk tribe, the Klamath tribes, the other tribes in the basin who've kind of been in and out and helping throughout the process. There's been a number of NGOs that have been incredibly supportive and helpful through the process. The Hewlett Foundation, Caltrout, American Rivers, Trout Unlimited, and others. I'm leaving some out. And then, you know, the federal agencies, NOAA, National Marine Fisheries Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the state of California and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the governor's office. There's been Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. There's been so many collaborators through this process to get us here that it's really a sight to behold. And it's amazing that all of us kind of stuck with it to get this thing across the finish line over all those years.
Well, you're a fisheries biologist. Could you talk a bit about the importance of the salmonids, you know, the salmon, the steelhead, and also some of the other species like the lamprey that are important to your people, you know, not just as food, but, you know, as a part of your culture?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm a fisheries biologist, but I'm currently the director of the Yurok Tribal Fisheries Department. So I'm more of an administrator now, but most of my career was spent as a biologist. I'm also a member of the Yurok Tribe. But yeah, so salmon, anadromous salmonids, like, you know, Chinook salmon and Coho salmon and steelhead, were really important in getting this dam removal across the finish line and making this dam removal a reality, because those fish are valued by not only tribes. They're highly valued by tribes, but they're also valued by the public at large. Everyone knows what salmon are. They know that they're healthy, know that they're important. And so salmon were really helpful in getting us here. But I think this project is more than just the salmon restoration project. This is an ecosystem restoration project. We're trying to restore balance to the Klamath River ecosystem, and salmon will be a beneficiary of that work, but so will many, many other species, like, say, Pacific lamprey and green sturgeon and cutthroat trout and egrets and otters and black bears and bald eagles and killer whales out in the ocean. So, you know, while salmon were a bit of a Trojan horse on this one, where we use salmon to kind of get ourselves into the room and talking about removing these dams for salmon. And they're, don't get me wrong, they are extremely important, but this is an ecosystem restoration project at its core. We're trying to fix the river so that there's healthy algal communities, so that there's healthy macroinvertebrate communities from the bottom up. So primary production, secondary production, tertiary production, et cetera. But going back to salmon, once again, salmon saved us, right? They helped us. Salmon have been helping indigenous people of the Klamath Basin survive since the beginning of time. They are, not only are they probably one of the healthiest protein sources that you could find in the world, but they're also were in abundance at one time, where it was easy for tribal people to procure salmon. You could catch them a number of different ways. And so it was really beneficial to have these large salmon runs, and runs plural. There are a number of different runs that came up the river at various times of the year. And it was really beneficial for tribal people to have access to that food source. But in addition to that, to the sustenance that they provided, they also are kind of a cornerstone of indigenous culture here, because they're so important, because they're so vital to our survival. They become vital to our identity as Yurok people. So they're one of the pillars that makes up who we are as a nation, as a group of people. There's other things that make up what a Yurok is. There's many things, countless things, in fact, but some are what I would define as pillars, and that's like language and redwood trees and the Pacific Ocean and the high country and the river and the salmon and the tan oak acorns. So there's a lot of different things that make us who we are. When we start losing those things, we lose a piece of who we are, and slowly but surely our identity could be whittled away. So we fight very hard to preserve those things that are important to us. We fought very hard to preserve salmon. We're still doing it to this day. The fight isn't over. There's a lot of work to do still. But species like salmon, like I said before, make us who we are.
Well, and like you said, you know, salmon are, they're an indicator of the health of an ecosystem. And to be successful in a project like this, you need to restore the entire ecosystem to bring it back to health. And then that benefits just everything and everybody.
Yeah, that's correct. That's the idea. If we can make sure that the ecosystem is healthy enough so that there's functional aquatic communities of algae and macroinvertebrates, which are the little bugs that live on the bottom of the river, which are food for fish. If we can restore the ecosystem in the river so that we have good water quality and we have low water temperatures when we need it, and we have good oxygenation, things like that, the rest of the pieces will fall into place. So it's really important to heal from the bottom up.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our examination of the science of the Klamath Dam Removal Project with Yurok Tribal Fisheries biologist Barry McCovey. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's return now to our conversation with Yurok Tribe fisheries biologist Barry McCovey as we discuss the Klamath Dam Removal Project. Could you talk a bit about how science and traditional knowledge of your people are dovetailing together to drive this project so that you're, you know, going about it in a holistic way with that lens of the scientific training that you have, you know, focused on this?
Sure. You know, scientific Western science is extremely important in these processes because that's the language that everyone speaks today. And so we have to be bilingual or trilingual or multilingual in today's society. We need to be able to speak the language of the law. We need to be able to speak the language of policy, and we need to be able to speak the language of biology. And so fisheries biology is something that you know, I do, and I can speak that language, and it helps. We need that. We need to have a good understanding of the Western view on science, because that's what's guiding a lot of the decision-making processes. And that's what's guided a lot of the decision-making processes from the past. But now we see people are starting to recognize traditional ecological knowledge and the knowledge of the indigenous people as important and as relevant, and that it can help in things that we've always known. But now it's starting to kind of be recognized on a larger scale. There's multiple projects related to dam removal, but on these projects, I think a big part of it is having tribal perspectives in the room. So when we're going through the process of planning a project or initiating a project, or even in the middle of a project, having those indigenous voices or representatives of the indigenous communities' voices in the room, and those people having the ability to convey the values of tribal people and insert the values of tribal people into some of these conversations has been really helpful. I think one thing I think that's really important is the view of that ecosystem restoration perspective, where a lot of times Western science is fairly siloed. So you'll have a group of people studying bugs. You'll have another group of people studying salmon. You'll have another group of people studying steelhead and lamprey, et cetera. Maybe someone's studying, you know, geomorphological processes. So everyone's kind of siloed in their own room, looking at different aspects of this huge project. And that's the way that Western science works. And it's successful doing that. It can get things done. But when tribal perspectives are taken into account, what you'll see is that we're looking at things, trying to see things from a bird's eye view and have a more holistic view of the interconnectedness of all of these different disciplines and how they play together and how one impacts the other and how we can best achieve the individual goals, but at the same time be cognizant of all working towards one larger goal, which is a restored ecosystem.
Yes, I would argue that one of the changes that's a good thing that I've observed in Western science in my lifetime, and especially recently, is a drive to more interdisciplinary, holistic thinking by scientists instead of that compartmentalized point of view that you talk about.
Yes, we're seeing that more and more. And I think that's a great advancement. And I think it's going to pay dividends as we move forward. And I think it's necessary as we move forward. And we're facing, you know, probably one of our greatest challenges, which is climate change and the impact that climate change is having on an already impacted ecosystems that have been impacted from other anthropogenic type resource extractive projects. And now we're layering this unknown of climate change on top of it. And climate change doesn't discriminate about which discipline it impacts. And so having these multidisciplinary people looking at these very complex problems is going to be beneficial.
I know you've been working with Robert Lusardi from UC Davis from their Center for Watershed Science. I'm curious about some of the innovative things that you guys are doing up there to study the actual fish, to figure out, you know, where they're going, where they're coming from, and to get a more holistic picture of what's going on with this fishery and to track it through this, you know, monumental changes that you're seeing unfold there with the removal of these dams.
Yeah, we've been working with Rob Lusardi and his group for a number of years now on tracking ecosystem changes and the reach is around the dam removal project. We did a lot of work prior to the dam removal project, I think 2 or 3 years worth of monitoring. And then we have monitoring ongoing now as we speak during the dam removal process. And then we hope to continue monitoring for some time after the dams have been fully removed and the project is done, so that we can see how the ecosystem recovers over time. And one of the main things we're looking at are aquatic invertebrates. I mentioned these a few times. They're the little bugs that live on the bottom of the river, and they're keystone species to ecosystem health. And they can be a predictor of how healthy a riverine ecosystem is. And they can tell us what's happening in that ecosystem. And so they're really important to monitor and to study. It really gives us a good idea of what's happening in the river. So we, you know, for the past 3 years, I think we've been monitoring, I think, 20 different sites below, within, and above the dam removal project, looking at, you know, what type of insects are there, how old they are, kind of what their assemblages are, kind of species matrices. And this is just to get an idea of kind of baseline conditions and then change and then post-dam removal conditions. So that's been a really great study. We've seen some good data coming out of that already. We've also been monitoring fish assemblages. So just looking at really basic fish assemblage data, like what species of fish, what age class of fish are using these certain areas downstream of the dams before dam removal, during dam removal, and after dam removal. And we're going to track that to see how that changes over time and what it looks like. And that's going to be another kind of really good indicator of an ecosystem on the mend and how the ecosystem recovers, how long it takes. All of these things can be used by managers and policymakers as time goes on. If something isn't working and we can see that the river isn't responding how we hoped it would, or maybe we see an area where the river is responding very well, we can look at what restoration techniques are going on in the area and we can adjust accordingly. So this data isn't just for the sake of data and for the sake of research to monitor kind of how things change, but it's also can be used in a real world fashion to help inform management and restoration. So that's really important.
Well, with a project this massive, the removal of these dams, there's bound to be misconceptions that people have, misinformation out there. Is there anything in particular you'd like to address to set, you know, that you've seen that you'd like to answer to?
I just think we need to be patient, and these things are going to take time. This isn't a magic bullet, or, you know, this isn't a magic fix. This isn't going to fix the river overnight. The river still has a lot of issues to contend with. There's still large-scale agricultural diversions in the upper basin and some of the key tributaries like the Scott, the Shasta, and then over on the Trinity River, which is the largest tributary to the Klamath. There's large-scale dams still. There's large-scale diversions over into the Sacramento River Basin. You know, we're still dealing with the impacts of legacy mining. We're still dealing with the impacts of the timber industry. And I talked a little bit earlier about climate change. We were dealing with that. So dam removal isn't going to fix everything. In my opinion, dam removal is the largest single step that we can take towards restoring balance to the Klamath River Basin, but it is just one step, and there are many on this journey. I think that's important for people to realize. I also think it's important to realize that those dams were there for, you know, some of them were there for over 100 years, and they did a lot of damage in that time. They killed a lot of fish, and now that they're removed, we're finding out that they're not going down without a fight. They still want to kill fish, and they're still doing damage. And even at, you know, as we're taking them down, as we're draining the reservoirs, they're still damaging the ecosystem. But that's part of the process. We knew that this was going to happen, and it's part of the healing process. Is we have to kind of rip the Band-Aid off a bit. It's going to sting a little bit at first, but over time, you know, the river will recover and the river will heal itself from these the damage that these dams have created. But we have to understand that damage took a long time, 100 years. And so it's, the river isn't going to recover from that overnight. It's going to take some time. We have to be patient. We have to trust the processes at work, and we have to let help the river recover as much as we can.
Well, Barry McCovey from the Yurok tribe, thanks for sharing these perspectives with us on the dam removal. And I'm sure, in the future, looking out as far as you can see, I hope that this really does help to restore the river to much better health than it was in.
Yeah, me too. Thanks. I enjoyed being on the show.
Thanks to Yurok tribal member and fisheries biologist Barry McCovey. Joining us now to get a journalist's point of view on the science behind the Klamath Dam removal is our good friend Kat Curlin. She co-hosts the UC Davis podcast Unfold with Amy Quinton. Recently, they did an in-depth episode on the Klamath Dams titled That Dam Removal Project. Kat Curlin, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, first of all, tell our listeners a bit about your podcast. Tell us about Unfold.
Well, Unfold is a podcast that is from the from UC Davis. So Unfold is a podcast from UC Davis, hosted by my friend Amy Quinton, who's a colleague here also at UC Davis. And we just like to tell and unfold the stories of the research that's happening here. That includes research for kind of in four main areas, like climate change, food, health, and what we call curiosity. It's kind of this catch-all about all the amazing cool stuff going on in the world that we're curious about. So, yeah.
And your latest episodes are about the Klamath Dam Removal Project, which is one of the largest in history. What made you decide to tackle that?
Oh, man. So that episode is part of a larger package of story that we did, a big feature on the Klamath Dam that includes a video and podcast and great images from my colleague Alicia Beck. What made us tell that story? It's a story about the Klamath Dams, clearly, but it's really also a story about all of these dams worldwide. You probably know this, but there are hundreds, if not thousands, of what people call deadbeat dams that have kind of outlived their purpose for a variety of reasons. And people are kind of looking to maybe remove them and looking for lessons about that. What happens when you remove a dam? How does the environment respond? So the Klamath Dam removal is, to our knowledge, the biggest dam removal in the world. And so when I heard that we were not just playing a part, but a fairly significant part in answering what we call the big dam question in that Unfold episode, which is about like how fish respond. Do the salmon come back? And how and where? When I learned that we were all about that in the fish science, I had to learn more about it.
One of your guests also on this program we're talking to is Rob Lusardi from UC Davis. Tell us a bit about him and, why he's such a great guest.
Yeah, so Rob is really doing some amazing work, really looking at that question of how salmon are responding on the river. And there's a lot of science behind it that he could talk to you about. But a key part of it is this thing called an otolith. And the otolith is this little part inside of a fish's ear that actually tells the story of that fish's life. And Rob and different partners have kind of figured out how to do that in the lab. They take the otolith back in the lab and they grind it and polish it and laser blast it. And at the end of all that, they put it up on a screen, like a computer screen, where it looks a lot like a tree ring. And like tree rings, each ring on it is a day in the life of a salmon. And it tells them all these things about when they leave the stream, when they leave the ocean. And there's some other work Rob's been doing that actually tells us exactly which streams that these salmon are using in the Klamath. So he's going to be looking at, before and after dam removal, how do salmon respond? Where do they go? What's working? What's not working? What are the priority streams that we need to look at?
Well, as a journalist investigating all this, and it sounds like you've learned an awful lot, what's your big takeaway after doing this about how you feel and think about the Klamath Dam Removal Project now that you've, delved into it?
The Klamath River is a really special place to a lot of people. not least of all the many tribes that live there and have for millennia. Honestly, one of the biggest things for me is simply, you know, I cover climate change for a living. And it can be pretty, I love my job, but it can be a little bit full of despair
depressing.
At times. A little depressing. Yes. Can be like writing an obituary some days. And this story is not that. This story is all about a bunch of people that came together over years and through persistence have started to heal a broken river. And it's just this wonderful restoration story that's got lots of great science, amazing scenery, great characters. You know, the storyteller in me loves all of that too. And I'm just really excited to see what's in store for the Klamath and for all the other places that might be looking to the Klamath to see, you know, whether they might be able to do something similar for the rivers in their areas.
Well, Kat Curlin, a media specialist for UC Davis and co-host for the Unfold podcast from there, thanks for sharing your perspectives on this. It's just a very exciting project. And like you said, uplifting to cover.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to all our guests. Robert Lusardi, Assistant Professor of Freshwater Ecology in the Department of Wildlife, Fish, and Conservation Biology, and Associate Director of the Center for Watershed Sciences at the University of California, Davis. And Barry McCovey, Senior Fisheries Biologist for the Yurok Tribe and their Director of Tribal Fisheries. And Kat Curlin, co-host of the Unfold podcast from UC Davis. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.